Wow, it's a whole new ball game here at WHPC.
Turn down the volume. That's so loud.
Everything is very different right now, and in a really, really good way. If you're a regular listener, that probably means that you live fairly close to where we broadcast from, because we had recently found out that our broadcast range had been shrinking because of equipment difficulties, and we've done a bunch of work, and right now we've essentially increased our range from 15% of capacity to 100% of capacity. So if you are hearing us for the first time, or maybe for the first time in a while, you know, glad to have you back again. Welcome aboard. It's like we just traded in our rowboat for a yacht. Feels great.
I know.
And
so excited.
Yeah, it really is great, because I used to remember how I would be able to hear this show further away from where we are, and then it seemed as if it was getting more and more difficult. So this is all good news. The station's going through a refurbishment.
I was blaming it on cloud cover and things of that nature. I was thinking, must be the weather. You know, people always say that clouds can affect the way radio waves.
Right. Well, you know, there's a downside to this, of course, and that is that since this has been happening, the signal's been diminishing regularly, that means that we've been losing some listeners who are outside of the range because they couldn't pick us up any longer. So we're going to have to work real hard to get a few people back. Let them know. And I want to thank the regular listeners who actually were calling me and saying, I'm having a hard time picking you up. And I heard that more than once.
Yes.
In fact, a significant number of times.
Luckily, we do regularly re-podcast our shows. So
you could find us on the internet.
Right.
Yeah. So people were hearing it. That's what it was coming down to, though. People were saying, I'm going to have to get your show via podcast because I can't hear it on the radio. Well, hopefully that's going to change. And it's great, because with the station being a total redesign inside, totally professional in here, it's going to be state of the art down here. It's really, really feeling great. And I'm really happy and proud, because I think I really might be the first live show that's been on since the reboot. So there's probably only like 5 people listening right now because we've been, you know, down off of air and such and going through trouble.
So all 5 people, feel free to call in later on.
Exactly. You know what? Make a couple, call people like, you know, further away and tell them like, tune it in. You can check it out. Okay. Maybe we ought to mention what our show is about and all that stuff again. It's a music show. It's not a talk show. We're going to be playing a lot of music. The show's called American Hit Radio. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, of course, is my wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan.
Thank you.
We are here every Wednesday and Friday.
I said thank you because I thought you said your lovely wife, but I don't think you did.
My lovely wife, I'll take it retroactively. We're here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 p.m., and we discuss various aspects of music history. Wednesday, we tend to look at a specific era in time, certain type of music from that era. And on Friday, we have a show called How Music Changed, a history show covering the most important aspects of our musical culture from the past 100 years. It's a lot of stuff that we get through. Now, what we've been doing here recently on Wednesdays is what our anniversary programs, where it's right now, of course, the summer of 2009. So we're looking at various anniversary shows from this era,
Yes. Maybe
the summer of 1959 or 1969. Right now, actually, we're looking at 1979.
And what a good year it has been.
It's really something. I mean, usually we spend a lot of time on 59 and 69 because there's so much great history then. But 79, we did a show on the singles, and that was no great shakes. That was okay.
No.
But then we looked at the albums, and there's enough for me. I could squeeze out 3 shows easily.
They weren't slacking in the 70s, I'll tell you that much.
Late 70s? No way. Well, last week we covered what I would say some of the more straightforward albums, or albums that maybe had some historical pull, like groups that had been around for a while. Marvin Gaye released Hear My Dear. The Bee Gees' Spirits Having Flown, we covered that as well. Cheap Tricks, Live at Budokan. Van Halen 2, AC/DC released an album, Highway to Hell. And The Wings' Back to the Egg are a few of the albums that we covered just last week, along with maybe some others. Oh, yeah, we also covered Elvis Costello and the Attractions, Armed Forces. Well, I've got a bunch more to cover today. And let's get to it finally. Let's play some music. Lowell George of Little Feat.
Yes.
Had made, obviously, a huge reputation for himself in his band. And by 1979, he broke away to release his first live album. It was going to be a whole new thing for Lowell George. Unfortunately, the guy died less than 6 months after releasing his solo album, which pretty much obviously makes it his only solo album. Significantly different from what he did with Little Feat. Here's one track from the Lowell George solo album called Thanks, I'll Eat It Here. The name of the track we're going to play, if I could find my list, I should have it in front of me, is called I Can't Stand the Rain.
can't stand the rain against my window, bringing back a sweet memories. There were no things. Do you remember how sweet they used to be?
That's a song that was originally recorded by Ann Peebles. Her version has a sound very much like an Al Green track.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly like an Al Green. In fact, I have to give Lil George a lot of credit for changing my taste in music in so many ways. He was hugely influential on me. Around 1979, around this time, I was finally moving away from the Southern rock that I was listening to throughout most of the 70s and sensing the transition of what was going on in music. There were so many things that were pulling me in a different direction. And Little Feat, believe it or not, actually helped me in that regard because they were never really a Southern rock band at all.
They get a lot of that soulful feel to them, though. I mean,
yeah, soulful, so. Not Southern rock. That's just, they were more West Coast and a lot more R&B influenced. And, mm-hmm. and they had Southern influences, don't get me wrong. They had a Texas thing about the way that they sounded and such. But they were very different from what, say, the Allman Brothers or Lynyrd Skynyrd. They weren't even part of that equation at all. But they provided a transition for somebody like me to break away and discover other ideas and things that they were listening to. People like Alan Toussaint and and of course, like Ann Peebles in this case,
mm-hmm.
Just a really big deal. Even a lot of blues artists like Howlin' Wolf, they were all very much brought to my attention because of my interest in Little Feat, and I owe them a lot. I'm really grateful to them for that because those are obviously fabulous artists, and hearing them coming through the voice of Lil George was a great way to discover them. It was so sad too because this album when it came out seemed to be promising a whole new thing. And I had seen Lil George playing in New York City on this tour at the Bottom Line. And it was great. It was totally great. And then he had gone to Washington, I believe it was Washington, D.C. on the same tour, maybe the days later. And he was found dead in his hotel room. So I was lucky, unlucky enough to have seen Lil George just a couple of days before he passed away. You know, it depends on how you look at it.
Well, lucky enough to have seen him, of course.
Of course. And I had seen him with Little Feet dozens of times. It was one of the bands that I had seen live more than any other band. It's something that somebody who that acted, so I would run to see them because they were so great live. But only got to see Little George solo that one time when he was touring behind the album, Thanks, I'll Eat It Here. Now, I want to play one more track from this album to give you the idea of the diversity and the depth of Lowell's songwriting. There's a song on here which I just think is just a masterpiece of great songwriting. It's just really interesting words, and it's like pretty much an everyday song. It's about everyday life, about how you have so much going on in your life from day to day that you get distracted from some of the things that might be personally important to you. So check out this song and the words that are a part of it. Again, from the album, Thanks, I'll Eat It Here. Here's Lowell George performing 20 Million Things.
If it's fix a fence, fend a dance, I've got lots of experience. Rink gets spent, all the letters never written that don't get sent. It comes from confusion, all the things are left undone. Comes from moment to moment.
There you have it, Little Feet's leader, Lowell George, with his only solo album, came out 30 years ago.
It's hard not to call this Little Feet, though.
It's radically different from Little Feet, radically different. That's kind of what made the album so appealing. In fact, here is the AMG review, the very first sentence, Thanks, I'll Eat It Here is strikingly different. And it is. I mean, it took a while to get used to this, actually, as being from Lowell George. A lot of cover songs that were on the album, not so much of his own songwriting. And in fact, one of the songs that he covered was by a brand new songwriter that I had never heard of named Ricky Lee Jones. He did a song called Easy Money. And I believe that it came out on Lowell George's album, Thanks, I'll Eat It Here, before she even released her own solo album, which, by the way, also happened to be released in the summer of 1979, maybe just a couple of weeks after, as I think I remember it, after Thanks, I'll Eat It Here came out. So let's cover that album next, Ricky Lee Jones' first solo album. As far as debuts go, it's really hard to be more impressive than this. Considering, as a solo artist who is doing all of her own songwriting, it's a stunning debut in that regard. Like, wow, you know, she really is capable of, with the band, the arrangements are fantastic. The songwriting is so mature. In fact, I honestly think that she's had a hard time even living up to this album. because her career has been fairly sporadic. To write, to like Ricky Lee after 30 years, you've got to be a true fan because she's done so many strange things. But the first album was instantly lovable. It was simply called Ricky Lee Jones. It had the song Easy Money on it, but the song that was getting a lot of attention, of course, was the hit Chuck E's In Love. Mm-hmm. You've heard that. I'm trying to avoid the obvious stuff. There was one song, a swing tune, kind of, that led off side two that I think made a lot of noise that made this album loved by so many people. So let's play that track from the album Ricky Lee Jones from summer 30 years ago. Here's Danny's All-Star Joint.
Stands and it is all star joint. You've got a jukebox, the cool toys. The vice is nice, it stays in the back all day when the night time comes. Hey, hey, there's this cat down there that makes a bad kind of soup. I come around studying my luck in my shoot coop. Cecil gives me coffee and he will never take my coin. I say, got $30 in my pocket. What you doing? I holler, come on, Cecil, take a dollar. Come on, Cecil, take a 10. But I finally get up into a whole bunch of big ones, and you're acting like I'm dancing. And I'm only on the riders on the boulevard. They got the barefoot crews, and it's 48 hard. They look particularly deadbeat, permanently pale. Cecil pick up his butcher knife and he waves it at the jail. And the kids say, I ain't got no dough, I just want some OJ. I said, don't look at me. Cecil's looking my way. Cecil waits upon him, some juice and some grain, and the kid walks home and puts a quarter in the pinball machine, and he says, come on, Cecil, give me a dollar. Come on, Cecil, give me five. I'm in a halfway house on one-way street, ooh, and I'm quarter past left the your hair turns gray. Sister's in a mustard. She loves to walk the puppy. Like pickles in the rally. She never gets enough. Hershey milkshake steaming on a stick. With a hard sandwich. Oh, let us get thick. It's not because I'm dirty. It's not because I'm clean. It's not because I kiss the boys behind the magazines. Hey, boys, how about the fight? Still comes Ricky with the girl on tight. She don't know your name. She knows what you got from your matchy ball to the chicken in the pot. Chicken in the pot. Chicken in the pot. Chicken down, down, down stairs and in the top star joint. You got a jukebox to go to it.
I guess around this time when this came out, I sort of imagined Ricky Lee Jones to be sort of like a female Tom Waits in a sense. She had that whole beat speak thing down really well.
And yeah, but not as gritty. Bars.
Of course not. Apparently she was dating Tom Waits for a while around that. I think I remember hearing that. But what was so great about her is that her songwriting was really concise and clear. really full of clever lyrical twists. And she had a way of sounding really streetwise, but like a, almost like a kid at the same time, you know? So it was a great little dichotomy of energy that was going on. Instantly likable in 1979 when it came out. And like the Lowell George album, there were two sides to the record that made it great. Like I played two tracks from Thanks I Laid It Here, the like a sort of like a, the driving R&B track, and then the mellower song. The same thing on this album. There was a really interesting mellow side to it that I thought was really powerful. And I've never heard this next song played on the radio, and I don't understand why, because I think it's one of the most well-written songs ever. It's full of these, what do you call them, metaphors or similes when you take references to pretty much gasoline stations. The song is called Last Chance Texaco. And it's all about really coming to the end of a relationship. But the way that she makes like these comparisons to like using pretty much gas station speak is just, I think it's really, really great songwriting again. So again, from the debut album by Ricky Lee Jones, here's Last Chance Texaco.
Stretch of headlights build into our night. They tiptoe into truck stops and sleepy diesel lights. Volcanoes rumble in the taxi, glow in the dark. Camels in the driver's seat. A slow she ran out of gas down the road of peace. And then the battery went dead. And now the cable won't reach. It's your last chance. Check under the hood, your last chance. She ain't sounding too good, your last. Trust the man with the star. Cause you found the last chance. Take it. Thank you.
song that I think was made for late night driving, no doubt. There's so many car metaphors, or you know, engine metaphors and stuff in there.
Yeah, gas station name metaphors.
Yeah, it's, I tell you,
standard or mobile or living under a shell.
Yeah, it's like I don't know. I feel like she knows a lot about cars from listening to that song through all the rods
well,
that he gave her.
Certainly more than you do.
Yeah, a lot of work on my car. I'm very impressed with that song. I think it's just a great example of songwriting.
It's a good song, but sometimes I think you pick songs that are just a little too cranial.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know exactly what you mean, though. I mean, for not going for what would be obviously popular.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there are. I like a lot of sort of garage band music, you know. That seems to be my leaning. It's a little bit more like grunt.
Yeah, there's not too much that would be garagey, though, off of the first Ricky Lee album, to be honest. I mean,
well,
there's just really nothing.
Maybe I just wouldn't have picked that album,
bluesier.
Is my point.
Well, the album's from that era, and it's an important album,
I'm
and it still
sure
sounds
there are
great.
A lot of other albums.
And there's
J.J. Cale?
That came out as well around this time, as you know.
I do know.
And there's a lot of stuff that's grungy that we'll be getting to, I would believe, from 79. Because, like I said, there's a lot of ground to cover from this era. A lot.
Well,
and I'm kind of working in a direction because, as you know, I started out
angry.
With like, oh, no, that's nothing about how you're making me. I should give up the number here at the station. If you want to give us a call, now that you can hear us with our brand new, you know, expanded broadcast, you can actually reach us here at the station. 516-572-7440 is the number. You're listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM coming out of Garden City, New York. And expanding ourselves into the nether regions as we branch out.
It's like casting the stone on the pond and watching the ripples go out.
Exactly. But now they keep going, which is nice. Again, the number 516-572-7440 as we are covering albums from 30 years ago this summer, things that were released. Another band that was sort of beginning to transition things a little bit from what they were without changing things too much. It was sort of like rootsier, was Dire Straits. They had released their first album about a half a year earlier, and it had a huge impact. A lot of people loved it instantly, of course. They had their first hit with Sultans of Swing, and then the second album came out, and people seemed like they might have been disappointed with it. It didn't sell nearly as much, and I frankly don't understand why. In my opinion, I thought the second Dire Straits album was at least as good, if not even better. So the album was called Communique. And I'd like to play this track from that album, Dire Straits' second album, Communique. Here's Angel of Mercy.
Well, there's a Peter Pan moon, Shepherd's Delight. I got the dragon at noon. Yes, and I won the fight. Now I want my reward in heaven tonight, just like you promised. Angel of Mercy, you come to no harm. Angel of Mercy. Tonight in your arms, you know he's on it. Angel of mercy, angel delight, give me my reward in heaven tonight. And if I give up my soul, won't you give me the right, sweet angel? Well, I was too late for talking, we could talk later on.
Dire Straits from their second album, Communique. An album that, again, historically, this album gets overlooked. And this is, if I was going to go back to some of my favorite albums, I would actually, this is high because there's not a bad song on this album. And if you're into Dire Straits at all, there's so much great stuff on this. Again, because the songwriting is just so darn good. The guitar playing, of course, is good. The production is simple. It's about a four-piece band, really, playing their stuff. Maybe the occasional overdub, but it was a lot simpler than what rock and roll had been up until this point. That's, of course, because of what bands like the Sex Pistols and the punk bands had done in the previous years, which was, by the way, also completely out of the mainstream. None of those bands really were getting airplay until about 1979. The Clash weren't on the radio until after London Calling.
Right.
And that was 1980.
Well, their album, one best album of the year in 1980, it came out in 1979, at the end of 1979. So,
right, you can be sure that we'll be dedicating a show to
to London Calling. In 79 or in 80?
Probably in December of 79, if we can fit that in with our end of year stuff.
Okay.
It'd be worthwhile. But keeping with what we've done so far, I would like to play one more track from this album as well, and then we can go on to playing maybe a song or two. From just one song from the next albums, but playing like a song which is a little bit more upbeat and then a quieter song. Mark Knopfler, the main songwriter, well, the only songwriter really of Dire Straits and the vocalist and the guitar player, would write from different angles. And he did a really good job of writing certain songs that were much more pensive. And this is one of that style song from this album. Again, Communique is the name of the album. Second album by Dire Straits. The name of this track from that album is Portobello Bell.
Belladonna's on the high street, her breasts upon the offbeat, and the stalls are just the sideshows, Victoriana's old clothes. Yes, her jeans are tight now. She got a travel light now. She got to turn up all the roots now. She got to turn up all the boots now. Yeah, she thinks she's tough. She ain't no English rose. But the blind singer, he's seen it. Do a song about a long gone Irish girl. But I got one for you, Portobello Bell. She sees a man upon his back there, escaping from a sack there. And Belladonna lingers. Gloves, they got no fingers. Yeah, the blind man singing Irish. He get his money in a tin dish. Just a corner serenade upon a time he could have made. She don't care.
I am such a sucker for the love song. It's unbelievable how
I'm
much of a sucker I am.
I'm surprised you're not crying. Luckily, John called to, like, stave off your tears.
You know, well, the thing is, like, I sometimes do get welled up if I let the song really, like, you know, get into under my skin. Because I can really embody some of the words sometimes. And an album like that, Dire Straits Communique, really did work that way for me. I just thought that Mark Knopfler's writing was so literate and wonderful and rich. And his guitar playing is great, too. And as great as the first album was, the second album, Communique, I just thought broadened it for me. Just made me realize, oh, this band's going to be around for a while. And obviously they were. Dire Straits were a great band for quite a while. And even now, it's pretty much unsung, but the Mark Knopfler solo albums are absolutely worth it to obtain them. They're great. Nobody's playing them on the radio. You don't hear any commercial about it. They come out with no fuss at all.
They're probably on satellite radio somewhere.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can find them. But they're great. They're really great, and I recommend them highly. Let me remind you, you're listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM, coming out of Nassau Community College in Garden City, New York. We're here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6. And if you're liking the show, it might be the first time you're hearing it because our broadcast range is so gigantic now compared to what it had been. Finally got it back on track. But if you're hearing the show and you like it and you're interested in maybe catching up on some of the shows you missed, we've been posting all of our shows on the internet now for about 3 years. You can check out our website, AmericanHitRadio.com, very easy, or AmericanHitNetwork.com. They both take you to the same homepage. And right there on that homepage, on the left, you're going to see our Wednesday program, like today. And on the right is our Friday program, the How Music Changed edition of What We Do. And the shows are there. You can click through them, play on demand, pick any show that you're interested in. If the subject is interesting to you, just click on it, and you can hear the entire show at your own leisure.
At will.
The other way we can do this
is you can go to our archive site.
Yes, there we will torture you and make you listen to every show we've ever done. We've got at least 300 shows there at our archive site. It's called shutupandlisten.com. That's S-H-A-D.
Some people don't consider it torture.
That's, well, depends if I make you listen to all of them in a row.
I see.
Because that could be 350 hours of us talking between songs. Oh, my gosh. But imagine. That's Shut Up and Listen, S-H-A-D-D-U-P. ANDLISTEN.com. The Brooklyn version is Shut Up and Listen.
Yes.
If you go there, of course, every show is just listed in chronological order. So this show will definitely be up there before the end of the evening. And last week's shows are there right underneath that. You get the idea. So you can check them out either way, either Shut Up and Listen or AmericanHitRadio.com or AmericanHitNetwork.com. Meanwhile, we're here live at the studio. If you want to give us a call, we've got a bunch of regular listeners and a couple of new people calling in. It's great. 516-572-7440 is our number. We are playing our way through album tracks from 30 years ago. So much that came out. And listen, I'm also a pop nut. I have to, you know, I admit it. It's really funny because there's a band that I would have probably, is so poppy that even I would have shunned them. And then I found out, I became a big fan of The Clash around 79. And I'm reading everything I could find that Joe Strummer had would say, yep, or utter. Everything that came out of that man's mouth, I was just so impressed
you
with.
You wanted to know.
Exactly. So I was buying English magazines and reading it all. And he mentioned that his favorite band was ABBA. And I was like, I don't believe that. I know,
and you were anti-ABBA.
Up until that point. And then I read that and I said, I'm going to have to give him a chance. And I kind of thought that there was irony in his statement. And then I read it through. I said, no, he's 100% serious. And now I understand. Of course he was serious. They're a great pop band. And a lot of what they were
like
striving
ABBA
to do, believe it or not, there's some ABBA in The Clash. If you listen to some of their pop stuff, you can definitely discern it. Well, they had an album that came out 30 years ago. I believe it was called Voulez-Vous. This is from that album. It's called I Have a Dream.
Cope with anything. can take the future. Even if you fail, I believe in angels. Something good in everything I see. I believe in angels. When I know the time is right for me, I'll cross the street. I have a dream.
All right. ABBA, of course, with I Have a Dream. This hour is going so quickly for me, I guess because I'm so happy to have the new broadcast range and everything, and I keep referring to the, you know, how great it is and how great the studio looks and everything, that I'm ate up a lot of our time. I want to cover one more album and see if I can squeeze in two tracks off of that one album. So let me get to this right away. Again, it's an artist who'd been around for a long time up until 1979, but he probably does a better job of representing the state of change that was happening in music around this time than pretty much anybody. I'm talking about Neil Young. Now, obviously, Neil Young goes all the way back to the mid-60s with Buffalo Springfield.
He's changed a lot over the times.
But nobody saw what was coming here. 1979 is when it really became obvious just how much he really was capable of changing. Up until this point, he really was a folk rocker. You know, Buffalo Springfield did what he did, of course.
Some people say faux rocker, but anyway.
Oh, yes. That's not fair.
I'm kidding.
It's way not fair. That's way out there.
Had to go there.
Well, of course, with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, the stuff that the work that he had done then, and his solo career, his albums like Harvest and After the Gold Rush established him as like pretty much the preeminent folk rocker for his generation. But then he put out some interesting, you know, albums with some pretty great rock and roll on it. Albums like, I'm drawing a blank here all of a sudden, but On on the Beach and Tonight's the Night are good examples. But those albums, were having difficulty selling those albums. But by 1979, punk had hit. He was aware of it. He had actually befriended Devo, the band Devo.
Oh, yeah.
And around this time. And the album came out, and Neil was really impressed with how they were changing the face of music. And he kind of said, you know what? I could actually jump on this boat a little bit and maybe have some fun with this. So we started writing along that line. And Devo had been working on something which they considered, which was actually their reaction to a Rust commercial. There was something like Rust-Oleum, and they were doing this song about how Rust never sleeps. Mm. And Neil loved it. And he said, that's a great name for an album. That's pretty much like about the state of rock and roll, which is why he eventually wrote the song My My Hey Hey, or Hey Hey My My, Out of the Blue and Into the Black. You know, it's better to burn out than to fade away.
Right.
How the, you know, basically, he all applied that.
Takes on a theme.
Right, about pretty much the inevitability of deterioration, I guess you could say, and what you need to do as an artist to try to stay alive as music does change. Well, at this time, Crosby, Stills, and Nash were suffering greatly because they didn't react at all to what was happening in music. If anything, they had like they put up their noses to the change and looked down on what was happening. Neil Young embraced it, and in doing so, got a 30-year run. His career is still going incredibly strong. He's considered hugely vital. And a lot of it is because he released this album in 1979. He titled it after that Devo thing, Rust Never Sleeps. And I'm not going to play the hits that you hear all the time. I'm not going to play Hey, Hey, My, My. I'm not going to play Powderfinger. I'm going to play some of the weirder, punkier songs that he put on this album because I just think they were stunning if you were a Neil Young fan. From the album Rust Never Sleeps, here's our first selection. It's called Sedan Delivery.
Thank you.
you know, if you could write a song like, say, Harvest or After the Gold Rush, and then you come up with something as absolutely nutty as that, you can tell you're going to have a good long career as a songwriter artist, because it means you've got a broad scope.
Neil Diamond wrote that. I'm kidding.
Yeah, why do you say that?
I'm kidding. I thought you said Neil Diamond earlier.
No, I never confused Neil Diamond and Neil Young. I was a Neil Young fan for my entire life, actually. For his entire career. I started liking him at a very young age and still do. He was one of those guys that were pretty much always there for me musically. Just totally loved what he was doing almost all of the time. Not always, because he was so weird. He would change so often. From this point forward, he became like a chameleon. But this was the first sign of Neil's ability to really stop and change on a dime and become something very different. And he did it with humor. As you can tell, there's a lot of humor in that song.
Yes, he's very tongue-in-cheek a lot of times.
Yeah, and it's kind of great to hear him doing that. That's why I want to play one more song from this album, yet another rocker. You asked for something grungier, a little bit dirtier earlier.
Come on, give it to me.
So that's why you're getting this album now from Rust Never Sleeps, Neil Young's embracing of the whole punk meets new wave thing that was happening at this exact time 30 years ago in the summer of 79. Here's one more track from the album Rust Never Sleeps. This one is called Welfare Mothers.
People pick up on what I'm putting down.
right. I used up my hour right quickly, too. That was a shame. But we're going to be back next week, next Wednesday, with more albums from 1979. And I think we're going to be able to make Heidi happy. You'll see artists like David Bowie, Roxy Music, Nick Lowe, Squeeze,
finally,
Graham Parker, the Buzzcocks, all
that
sort of stuff.
That's what I'm talking about.
All from 1979. So join us next week. We'll be playing as much of that as we can fit. And we'll be back on Friday for the How Music Changed segment as we continue our marathon look at Motown. Meanwhile, stay tuned for the 411 here on WHBC 90.3 FM. Take care, everyone. We'll see you on Friday. Bye-bye.
Bye.